And now, on to a conversation I had recently with one of my colleagues at WMRA. If your toes are as well-conditioned as mine are, they've already begun tapping to Professor Blue's Saturday night theme song, Madison Blues. As Professor Blues, known on nights other than Saturday as Harrisonburg's Greg Ferguson, has been spinning platters, metaphorically speaking, of course, during WMRA's Blues Valley for over a quarter of a century, I thought it was high time he honored the spark with a visit. Greg and I began our conversation by talking about the professor's personal experience with Virginia blues legend, the late, great John Jackson.
Early on in doing Blues Valley, Bluemont Concert Series had grants available. So I had applied for a grant to get John Jackson to perform at the Buckingham Correctional Facility. But I didn't know where he was or anything like that other than Northern Virginia. So I did a Google search, John Jackson, I think Fairfax. You know, guess how many John Jacksons I found?
I would imagine quite a few.
One.
You're kidding me.
And I call the number and I says, is this John Jackson, the blues man? He said, yes. You know, so that right there blew my mind. And I explained what I wanted to do. And he agreed. We contacted Bluemont Concert Series. We had to do two events. So we ended up doing an event. John Jackson had a guy with him who accompanied him, whose name escapes me. But we did a concert at the old Warren Campus Center at JMU. And then we went to Buckingham Correctional Facility for a concert. And that in itself was quite an experience, you know, being checked out, going through doors, having doors slammed behind you before the door in front of you opened. And the concert took place in their, I guess it was their weight room. So we had a section set up in there. So you got hard floors, hard walls. And in the background, you've got weights clinking against metal bars and stuff like that. But we had a good concert, and it was a very successful endeavor, and John Jackson was just one of the nicest guys I'd ever met. Be there, be there, there. Be
there, there, be there, there. Be there, be there. Now, how come you wanted to do a blues concert at a correctional center?
Early on in the life of Blues Valley, I began getting letters from prisoners at Buckingham Correctional Facility. I call them my pen pals. They would make requests. And as it developed, I became the middleman between them and family members who listened to the radio show. So I would get requests, I would get dedications from these guys down at Buckingham. And that went on for several years. One particular guy, his wife lived in the area, and she would call me and make dedications to him. He would write back with dedications to her.
That's romantic.
What's even better is that when he got out, he and his wife came and worked the phones on our fundraiser.
Oh, wow.
See, and it's those kinds of experiences doing Blues Valley that just unexpected and absolutely amazing to me.
You've been doing this for how long?
1985, January.
January of 1985, so a way long stretch of time.
Well, it was longer than the semester I committed myself to. It got started because cable TV cut off their music that they carried. They would carry radio stations out of D.C. So I could split the radio signal off into my component system, radio system at the house, and listen to blue stations in Washington. Well, when they cut that off, I began looking for alternatives. Campus radio station was in Burris Hall, and I went to Bill Miller and said, why don't you guys play some blues?
Now, who's Bill Miller?
He was the station manager, I believe.
Here.
Yes.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard that name before. That's really back there. Okay.
Well, we're probably talking 1984.
All right. You went to Bill Miller.
And I told him what I thought the station ought to do. And it's so often the case when you suggest somebody do something, he said, well, why don't you do it?
He delegated.
Well, I said, well, let me just check it out. Because I have never done radio, had a modest, with a capital M, collection of blues music at the house. So I went to the Music Museum, which was downtown at the time, explained what I was interested in doing, and asked if they would be willing to let me select music from their collection, because a lot of what they had were used records, so it'd just be a matter of taking those. But he even opened up his new unopened albums to me. And I felt like between what I had and what the station had and what he was offering,
you were good.
I'd give it a shot. So I told Bill that I would commit myself to a semester. So we started off on the first Friday night of January 1985 from 9 to 11 was Blues Valley. And I was Greg Verson at the time.
Now, why Blues Valley? Where'd that name come from?
Well, Blues Alley in D.C., Georgetown, is a known musical spot. They play all kinds of, have all kinds of live music there, blues being one of them. And being in the valley, trying to make a connection here geographically, I decided that Blues Valley would be as good a name as any.
And better than a lot, I think.
Okay.
Okay, here you are. You've committed for a semester. Now, you had a modest personal collection of blues. Why?
Well, I bought these in high school.
Which was where, in case somebody can't tell?
Vicksburg, Mississippi is where I grew up, right on the river and at the foot of the Delta. I just loved the music. You know, grew up with the music, loved the music, and got reconnected really to it once we got back to the valley, or came to the valley for me to teach at JMU and found the radio, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, who were you listening to in high school? You remember?
A lot of it was R&B artists. Fats Domino, Lloyd Price, you know. WLEC was a 50,000-watt channel station, AM station out of Nashville. And I have run across a number of people since I've been doing this show who listened to WLAC to get their blues and rhythm and blues fix. It was a late-night radio, 10 to 1 o'clock sometimes, I guess. I had a big wooden radio beside my bed. I turned down real low and would listen to WLAC late at night. But also KOMA, some of these long-distance AM stations that would play that kind of music that I could find and enjoy. But WLAC, John R., Hossman Allen, these were radio personalities that kind of met my needs on the radio. Black music, R&B, and blues in particular, those were not the kinds of music you would find on regular radio stations.
No. Define blues.
Well, blues is a music that I think, reflects the life experiences of African-Americans who lived in the Deep South. You know, obviously, many were there, if not most, as a result of slavery. They were freed up, but they brought with them their African traditions, musical traditions. Many of them were introduced into the Christian church, would go to churches, but would also begin to establish their own churches. It would take music that was traditional, I guess, Christian music, and adopt it and adapt it. They would write their own and develop their own spiritual music that reflected more of their African heritage. And when you look at blues as a form of music, its roots are in the gospel, the black experience, the black church. But the problem with blues is that it was the secular side, commonly referred to back in the old days as the devil's music, and not to be sung by anybody, you know, without getting in trouble. But if you look at how many early blues performers had their start in church choirs, church quartets, gospel groups, it's there.
I went to the crossroads, fell down on my knees.
Back after a break to hear more from Greg Verson, a.k.a. WMRA's Professor Blues. This is The Spark. I'm Martha Woodruff, and it's personal confession time. My husband Charlie and I are kind of a Blues Valley romance because shortly after we met, the two of us spent a lovely Saturday night outside under the moon and stars, dancing our toes off to Blues Valley on WMRA. Back before the break, the Woodruff's Cupid, Greg Verson, a.k.a. Professor Blues, host of the show, had begun telling us about growing up in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
I grew up at a time when dancing and music focus of our lives. You know, we had a jukebox at the at our high school cafeteria.
Did you really?
Yeah, that is
Elvis, so cool.
You know, Fats Domino, all of these guys that we've listened to on the radio, we get to play in the cafeteria. Our high school was in downtown until we moved out to sort of the outskirts of town. We could walk after school down to the YMCA, half a mile at most, go down after school, and in the basement of the YMCA, pool tables, ping pong tables, and an area with booths in it that had a jukebox. And we would go down and dance after school. So we had, in my life in particular, had a life that was filled with music. And we had a professional band made up of black band members who were professionals. Many of them worked in the post office. Some worked at the Waterways Experiment Station. They called themselves the Red Tops. I think it was a 10-piece band. They would play for live dances. They wore sharp red sport coats, black pants. And we would have live dances in the summer by the Red Tops at the BB Club. This is the B'nai B'rith Club. They had a huge ballroom floor. And we would dance on Saturday nights at that place. 9 to 1 was kind of the typical dance hour. And we would leave those summer dances without a dry spot on our clothes. You could get out in the middle of the dance floor during some of those numbers, and you could feel it moving up and down to the beat. So we in Vicksburg had a musically influenced life, and I certainly had one.
Tell me about the relationship for you between music and dance, because listening to Blues Valley on Saturday nights now, for me, is a dancing experience. I don't often just sit there.
It is. And, R&B in particular, but blues included in that, you can dance to either slow shag style music or, jitterbug if you're a type, faster music. And when I play music, I tend to mark on the label that we keep a track of what we play, the style of music it is. Is it a slow music tune? Is it a slow dance tune, what I call a shag? Is it fast dance? Or is it just real fast? And I try to mix up my programs on Saturday night to provide those who might be at home dancing an opportunity to, jig a little and then slow down and slow dance. And just to follow up with the dance music, several years ago, shag dancing, hand dancing is what I grew up with. And then the twist came in.
And hand dancing, I don't know that term.
Well, that's when you actually touch the person.
Well, you're holding hands like the jitterbug and stuff.
And shag,
yeah, okay.
We called it rock and roll. We called it the bop. But there were listeners who would come up from Myrtle Beach, stay in the mountains, and would give me a call. Say they're listening and would like me to play some music. And it was a suggestion from them that I should have a dance party some night, play dance party music anyway. And as a result of that phone call, on the 4th of July weekend, for several years now, I have had a beach and blues dance party. And I play, 5 hours of music that pretty much provides the mix of slow, shagging music and fast dancing music.
The full dance experience.
Yes. Try to provide the whole nine yards.
You had another side to your life. You are a very serious teacher of social work, right?
Yes.
A retired. 30
years worth of teaching, undergraduate social work, BSW program.
Where did that come from?
I spoke at the 50th anniversary of the social work program at JMU. And one of the things I said in my comments to the students, for the most part, that's who was there, I said, how many of you are in social work because of an elective that you took? And there were a lot of hands that went up. When I was in college, undergraduate social work education did not exist. But I took one course called An Introduction to Social Welfare. And it was through that course that I discovered the field of social work. And that piqued my interest. I was a psych minor, sociology major. And I said, man, this is an opportunity to pull it together. I looked at graduate programs. I applied for the National Mental Health Grant that was out there and was accepted for that. I was accepted into Tulane and University of Tennessee in Nashville. I was afraid of doing social work on the docks of New Orleans, so I opted for Nashville.
An honest man we have here.
And got basically a full ride. I got a free education plus $200 a month the first year. No, $180 a month the first year, and I think $200
which
a month
was big
the second
money.
Year. Yes. And that paid my national mental health.
Just in case you didn't know, Greg Verson, Professor Blues, is also a photographer.
I started taking photographs seriously my senior year in college. I ran track cross country. Our track coach was leaving and going off to another job, and I wanted to give him a scrapbook. So I took photographs of events, cut out local paper, student newspaper articles about track meets, put them in a scrapbook, and presented it to him when he left. It was a Yashica camera, fixed lens, and I knew that there was more to it. Went to grad school in Nashville, went down to the Nashville Banner newspaper to see if anybody had a real 35-millimeter camera they wanted to sell, one with interchangeable lenses. That's a real camera. So I found one. It was an Asahi Pentax with a screw mount lens. So I bought it from him, and then you got to have a telephoto lens. So I bought a telephoto lens, and those who are old enough to know about it, it was a preset lens where you had two dials. And that's where I just went crazy. I was shooting slides for the most part. And that was where I really got into taking pictures around Nashville. The old Parthenon was there. We'd go down at night and get a tripod and take night exposure. I wanted to learn how to take pictures.
Why? I sound like a 2-year-old, I know.
Yes, I noticed that. I don't have any artistic skills, you know. I have trouble drawing a crowd. But photography provided me with an opportunity to kind of develop a creative edge. I love creation, love nature. You know, I just like to take pictures. It captures those moments. And this was my opportunity to see if the interest was there. And it is. Has been.
Had you focused on the blues or added to your record collection between bopping in the club and starting Blues Valley?
No. I am not much of a record buyer. Okay. So that was part of my problem with just having a limited collection. But I did have some from high school. Jimmy Reed was the first album I bought. You know, he's a guy who I listened to on the radio, and that's why I got into blues. I blame Jimmy Reed for that.
I bet a lot of people blame Jimmy Reed for a lot of things.
Well, I'll tell you, he was a major influence on white people, in particular young white adolescents, getting into blues music, and I'm one of them.
You start Blues Valley, and you're Greg Verson. When was the professor?
You know, I've tried to think back about that, and I don't know when it occurred, but I soon learned that if you really want to become a DJ, you got to have a moniker. But being a social worker and having a code of ethics, I would not call myself Dr. Blues because I don't have a PhD. So I said, to be on the safe side, I'll just go with Professor Blues. And it worked. Probably one of the smarter moves.
And it is spelled P-R-O-F-E-S-S-A-H.
Sometimes with an exclamation point thereafter.
When did the spelling evolve? Or
from the beginning. I did not want to be perceived as a university professor. So that sort of, the spelling gives a message.
You commit to do this for
One semester.
Your Friday nights, you're trundling over to
Burris Hall.
And spinning the platters. Then what happens? this?
Well, the reception was absolutely incredible. I was amazed at the phone calls I got and the response that people had. And I told Bill, well, you know, it's gone so good. I'll try it maybe for another year to see what happened. And, you know, that was, 29 years ago or 28 years ago. And it's just been one of those things that I would have never anticipated. Absolutely love doing. And the feedback that I get, and back in the old days when we did fundraiser on Blues Valley, which we don't do much anymore, you would get people making pledges, they would be making comments, they liked the show.
Well, they still do make comments about how much they like the show, you know, when the rest of us are fundraising. Has the music that you play changed? Have your tastes changed at all? Has the public's changed, or is the blues the blues?
Well, it changes. When I first started, most of the music that I played was pretty much recorded by black blues men and women. But when you look at the record industry that produces blues, the vast majority are white males, white male groups.
Such as?
Well, the people who brought the blues back to this country and introduced, you know, the generation behind me to the blues, you know, folks like Eric Clapton, the British Invasion. And a lot of these folks who came, who recorded music that came back to this country, was blues. It was blues, you know, blues-based, blues-influenced. And young people listening to the music thought it was something new until they started getting into it and realized that, hey, you know, this is music that started here. And that British Invasion did a lot, I believe, in getting more young people in this country aware of the blues.
Prepare for the show?
Well, I have come a long way from my first semester of doing Blues Valley. When I started off, I had a sheet of paper with a line down the middle, and on one side of the line I had turntable one, and on the other side of the line I had turntable two, and I had every record written down that I was going to play, and I knew when I was going to play it. And I still have my whole first year's files of Blues Valley.
The archives.
The archives, yes, the archives. Now, unless I'm doing a special program, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, but unless I'm doing a special program like Black History Month or Martin Luther King or Veterans Day or Labor Day, something like that, I may think about what I'm going to do Saturday night and maybe come in early and pull some music or just kind of come in and let the music evolve.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing the show as long as I have, I try not to become so predictive and so redundant with the music that I play that it would just bore people to death. I have done a five-hour Divas program where I played women singers only for 5 hours. I think women blues musicians, blues performers, get short shrift on radio. Part of that was a result of an email that I got from a female listener who literally reamed me out for not playing female blues singers. And she got my attention. So I make a concerted effort to play women throughout every Saturday night.
The arms that used to hold me, the tender way we used to kiss.
If I am to say one thing about blues music and how I see it different from a lot of music I listen to, is that blues is not so much music that you listen to, but it's music that you feel. It's a visceral experience for me. And one of the lists that I have developed over my years of doing Blues Valley is a list of gut bucket blues. And these are blues tunes that are deep, deep blues that have a tremendous amount of soul in them, and the kind that you feel as well as hear.
Name one so we can use it to take us out.
Well, Luther Allison, he has a tune called Cherry Red Wine that, you know, alcohol is a major part of the blues life. And there are a lot of drinking songs. I think one night may have done a whole night of drinking blues, and there's plenty of it out there. But he sings about his woman drinking too much wine, and it is a deep blues.
Watching you, babe.
Listen to blues music and enjoy it, and go to live venues where you can hear it played without any kind of filtration between the studio and your ears. Blues musicians do not make much money. Attendance is important. Providing presence, just letting them know that you're there and care for them. That helps a tremendous amount. One of the things that I try to do every Saturday night is when I sign off, give the station letters, I will say, don't forget the blues.
You're gonna keep on drinking that bad wine, man. Even the grass that grows on your grave will be cherry red.
You'll find links to the Blues Valley page and Facebook page on the Spark page at WMRA.org. The Spark is a joint production of the WMRA Land Community and the staff of WMRA Public Radio. The Spark's theme music is supplied by the Avant-Gardeners of Albemarle County. Terry Ward is our web wrangler. Thanks to Bob, Matt, and Terry for their help. And special thanks to Susan Skalak for suggesting Rachel Willis and to Greg Verson for being Professor Blues. Hey, you out there. Please send me your suggestions for people I should talk to through the Spark page at WMRA.org. I'm Martha Woodruff. It has been a great pleasure to be with you.